at alaskaair.com.
This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. We're heading into the noon hour where we've got the midday news report, Island Messenger, followed by Talk of the Rock. I'll be sitting down with Deb Rohr talking about sports and how sports are trying to make a comeback on the island. So stay tuned for Talk of the Rock at 12:30. It's already almost 70 degrees outside. It's going to be another beautiful day with this high-pressure system just kind of hanging out. We'll get more details on the weather when we get to the Island Messenger. Why don't we take a look at the fishing report. Freshwater fishing for this week. Bastag Shack has seen a decent amount of fish show up recently, with weir counts picking up and reports of buildups of sockeye in the bay and the river. The saltery is still slow with the water being very low, so the bag limit has been reduced to 2 per day to reduce harvest until the fish can start moving again. And pinks are showing up in most of the roadside drainages in the lower parts of the Buskin, Olds, and Russian Creeks. Those are great spots right now, and the beaches near Myrtle Creek and most of the rivers in Chiniac are also great spots for some of those bright pinks. And stocked king runs, that's pretty much over without many of those fish showing up, so... All right. Headlines coming up on the midday report. Kodiak salmon runs, as I just mentioned, are kind of below average. The tsunami plans have been updated for the Eastern Aleutians. Anchorage Assembly considers an ordinance banning conversion therapy for minors. Scientists and Juneau residents are bracing for a possible flood from the Mendenhall Glacier. These headlines and more are coming up in the midday report after the national news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Attorney General William Barr is defending the federal response to protests in Portland and other cities. NPR's Kerry Johnson has been monitoring today's contentious House Judiciary Committee hearing.
Chairman Jerry Nadler of New York says federal agents are going after protesters to help the Trump campaign promote a law and order message. Democrats say the crowds are largely peaceful and filled with parents and military veterans. But the attorney general says attacks on a federal courthouse in Portland are the real assaults on justice. Bill Barr says there have been multiple attempts to set the building on fire. Federal prosecutors in Portland charged 22 people with violence there last weekend. The attorney general's been clashing with Democrats, who say he's working to protect the president. Barr maintains he's acting independent of the White House, even in cases involving longtime Trump allies. Kerry Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
Two groups are suing over the federal agents' use of force in Portland. The Wall of Moms and the Don't Shoot Portland group have filed suit against the Department of Homeland Security on the grounds that the use of tear gas and other aggressive measures against civil rights activists are unlawful. However, the federal government says agents will remain in Portland as long as protesters continue to attack the Marco Hatfield Federal Courthouse. And the clashes continued overnight, with protesters gathering near the site and agents using tear gas, pepper balls, and stun grenades to disperse the crowds. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is presenting the fourth and final pillar of his Build Back Better plan to revitalize the U.S. economy. NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports the new proposal focuses on advancing racial equality.
The 26-page plan released by the Biden campaign includes devoting $30 billion of previously proposed government investments to a small business opportunity fund benefiting minority entrepreneurs. The plan also includes a $15,000 refundable tax credit for first-time homebuyers to combat racial inequality in housing markets, along with making public colleges and universities tuition-free for families with incomes under $125,000. Biden's larger plan includes a major boost to manufacturing, the expansion of access to childcare, and a $2 trillion climate agenda. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News, Washington.
Young unauthorized immigrants who are hoping to apply for protections from deportation under DACA won't be able to. The administration's not taking new applications, and a senior administration official says the government is shortening protections for those already eligible from 2 years to 1 year. The Dow has closed down 200 points, or 0.75%, to end the day at 26,379. NASDAQ closes down 1.2%, S&P down more than 0.5%. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Kodiak fishermen started the week with a commercial opener for pink salmon. So how many days do they get to fish? James Jackson, Kodiak's area biologist for commercial fishery, says it all depends on the strength of the run.
This is the week where the run either really takes off or it doesn't.
Although the forecast for the pink run was below average, so far it's shaping up to be about an above average run, especially on the west side of the island at Karluk Lagoon.
Karluk is amazing. We flew it the other day. There's at least 750,000+ pinks in the lagoon. Some of the other systems in the northwest look pretty good too.
While there have also been large buildups of pinks on the Sturgeon and Little Rivers, salmon runs on the Zaca River and Uyak Bay are weak. Jackson says these runs have been struggling to recover from a bad parent year.
There's kind of some remnants of that collapse that we had in 2016 where the runs weren't doing good. So there's some systems on the west side that are also kind of weak. It's kind of a bit of a mixed bag right now.
The Chum Run is also weak, and escapement numbers continue to lag behind. The early run sockeyes were also a disappointment for fishermen, but there is a silver lining. Escapement numbers bode well for the future. And the late run sockeyes have begun to show up. And Jackson says escapement numbers in some systems appear to be above average, so the outlook for the late run looks promising. Two more Alaskans have died of COVID-19 as the case count continues to climb through the state. One of the deaths was confirmed to be a Fort Yukon resident, a 67-year-old who had been medevaced to Fairbanks after an outbreak hit Fort Yukon several weeks ago. Another Alaskan died of COVID-19 after testing positive in Bethel. That patient had been medevaced to Anchorage over the weekend after the symptoms worsened, according to the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. That person was an Alaska resident, but not from the region. The state also reported 104 new cases of COVID-19, with a majority, 60, among Anchorage residents. A 7.8 magnitude earthquake hit south of Chignik last week, prompting tsunami warnings in communities across coastal Alaska. As community members across the eastern Aleutians and Alaska Peninsula got alerts to get to higher ground, fish processors in Unalaska Dutch Harbor, the nation's top fishing port in terms of volume, had hundreds of plant employees to evacuate. KUCB's Hope McKinney reports that for some, the evacuation went smoothly, but for others, even receiving the tsunami warning was problematic.
During a tsunami siren test earlier this summer, half of Unalaska's antiquated sirens failed to sound. The city, which purchased the equipment in 1996, said only 3 out of the 7 sirens distributed across the 2 islands that make up the community of Unalaska are working. For processing plants like Unicy, one of the largest seafood processors in the world, which is located near one of the 3 working tsunami sirens, Tuesday night's evacuation went down without a hitch.
I think the siren helped, because I think people take it a little bit more serious when they hear the siren. If you don't have that siren, now people, they don't know if it's real or if it's just a drill or, you know, really what's going on. So I think the siren most definitely helped us out down here, for sure.
That's Ron Cherzvik, director of Alaska operations for the large Japanese-owned company. He says around 700 employees were evacuated during the warning. They went to higher ground on a hill right behind the processing plant after company officials received a tsunami warning notification first from the state and then local authorities. Cherzvik says he was woken up by alerts on his cell phone and the plant's security guard knocking on his door. They immediately went to notify the 300 people on shift at the processing plant to get to higher ground. And as the tsunami siren next to the facility sporadically went off, officials notified the remaining 400 people off shift in company housing or wandering around the island by activating fire alarms in buildings and banging on doors.
So we got up, got dressed, went outside, started driving up and down the road, talking to people, making sure people are moving.
Cherzvik says the employees walked directly up the hill and waited until the warning was called off in the early morning hours.
We have a drill every season to show our people where they go. So it's a fairly smooth process once you get everybody up. Of course, in the middle of the night, there's challenges with waking people up, getting people to actually believe it's an actual event, not just a drill, which is another, you know, always an issue. But actually, all in all, it went really well. For us, anyhow.
But for other processors in Unalaska not located near a functioning tsunami siren, the notification and evacuation process didn't go quite as smoothly.
We received some positive feedback. Others have communicated some concerns. And, you know, we're working through the feedback that we received and trying to close the loop to make sure that we we improve every time.
That's City Manager Erin Reinders. She wouldn't comment on which processing plants in Unalaska complained about the city's notification process during the evacuation. Some processing plants claimed that the city's unreliable message alerts and faulty tsunami sirens made quickly evacuating hundreds of employees from sea level to higher ground extremely difficult. While 4 out of 7 sirens aren't currently operational, Reinders said the city made sure to institute a multi-pronged approach to get word out to the community and processors. That approach included Nixol emergency alerts, tsunami sirens, and fire and police personnel driving through neighborhoods with sirens blaring and lights flashing.
Obviously, it's a more effective notification system if all the tsunami sirens are working 100%. But as always, it's a layered approach.
As Unalaskans and processors made their way to higher ground to wait out the warning, Chersvik says public health recommendations like mask wearing and social distancing were tossed out the window.
I would guess about 85-90% of the people were still wearing masks. There was a few of them that either forgot their mask in their room or whatever, and I mean, that's just kind of the price you pay, I guess, at this point in time in life.
Reinders says given the circumstances, the immediate threat of the tsunami took precedence over the risk of contracting the coronavirus.
As a community or as families and, you know, or companies, we are all having to rethink through how we work. That we also now need to rethink how we respond in cases of emergency, you know, when we are also within the confines of a pandemic.
Early Wednesday morning, the National Tsunami Warning Center said the tsunami was no longer a threat, and warnings were called off in communities across coastal Alaska. Only Sand Point, the first community predicted to be impacted, recorded a wave less than a foot tall. In the end, even though it was a false alarm, Reinders says the city is conducting further tests to evaluate what's wrong with the island's tsunami sirens so it can get all 7 back up and running.
I'm thankful that in the end wasn't an overly eventful night. other than waking up and evacuating, I'm glad that nobody was injured and there was no, you know, major tsunami. And, but it certainly does serve as a reminder that we are on an island in the Bering Sea in the Ring of Fire, and, you know, earthquakes occur and tsunami threat is there, and we, you know, need to remember that.
In Unalaska, I'm Hope McKinney.
The Anchorage Assembly will hear an ordinance that would ban a controversial practice of conversion therapy for minors. The ordinance would prohibit licensed medical professionals from therapy designed to change minors' sexual orientation or gender identity. One of the sponsors, Assemblyman Chris Constant, says that so-called reparative or conversion therapies have been shown to be ineffective. They can also cause increases in suicide rates and mental health problems.
All of the professional counseling disciplines, including psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, professional counselors, all say don't do this practice. It is harmful.
Constant says he has heard of conversion therapies happening in Anchorage, but until the assembly received a letter from a local practitioner, he wasn't sure who was doing it. Some Anchorage conservative groups argue that the ordinance is written too broadly and that it takes away a parent's or a willing child's freedom to choose what they want. Constant says this argument is flawed.
What you do when you're 18 is your choice. You know, we don't allow parents to abuse children. We certainly don't allow parents to opt for unnecessary surgeries that will permanently change the life of a person.
The Anchorage Assembly will meet tonight to consider the ordinance. Scientists, emergency managers, and Juneau residents are bracing for an event at the Mendenhall Glacier that could flood a nearby lake and river again. As KTOO's Matt Miller reports, the now yearly phenomenon is caused by climate change.
The important vocabulary word for this story is Yokolop, spelled with a J and an O with an umlaut or 2 dots over it. Yokolop. It's Icelandic for glacial dam release or flood.
Well, the famous examples are from Iceland, where they have really massive outburst floods. And those are geothermally driven. So you have a glacier sitting on a volcano and you get this sort of subglacial lake sitting there. And then that can drain catastrophically. that's definitely affected their road system, knocked out some pretty big bridges.
Jason Amundson studies and teaches about glaciers at the University of Alaska Southeast. Amundson says Yokolops in Alaska and off the Mendenhall Glacier happen a little differently. Ice melt and rainfall accumulate every summer in Suicide Basin, a gigantic bowl or round valley adjacent to the glacier about 2 miles up. It was carved out of the granite by a much smaller glacier, which retreated in the last few decades because of climate change. So much water builds up in the basin that the side of the Mendenhall Glacier starts floating. The water's immense pressure also creates cracks in the ice called conduits.
The water starts melting the conduit bigger and bigger. So as the water flows through, it's just the discharge is low, but as it's flowing, it melts the channel and the channel gets bigger, which makes the discharge get bigger, which makes the melt rate higher. And so you get this rapid growth.
All that water dumps into Mendenhall Lake and Mendenhall River in a matter of hours. Amundson says there are other glaciers around Alaska that have similar releases. Previous flooding in Juneau has covered a road, inundated a campground, damaged at least one house, and eroded the riverbank backyards of other homes. That's why Jamie Pierce of the U.S. Geological Survey attached monitoring equipment to the high-angle rock walls of Suicide Basin in 2012.
Worked for a couple years, but the ice just sheared the cable. I didn't think the ice would cream it, but it did. It kind of showed the power of this stuff. I mean, really.
New underwater instruments without the metal cabling were installed last year. That data is shared with researchers and other agencies so they can warn the public. Aaron Jacobs, a hydrologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau, says they've documented Yokolops on the Mendenhall every year since 2011.
Typically see 1 to 2 a year, but there's been years where we've seen multiple glacier dam releases, but on much smaller magnitudinal size.
All of the water used to flow out of Suicide Basin under or through the glacier, but scientists have noticed something new. The side of the glacier, which acts as a giant ice dam, is thinning and getting lower because of climate change. Water spilled over that ice dam for the first time last year. Then scientists noticed in mid-July this year that the basin's rising water caused a portion of that ice dam to calve or break off.
It pushed a whole bunch more ice into the basin and made for some very huge monster icebergs.
Water is already spilling over the ice dam, and the lake below the glacier is already approaching flood stage from rainwater. The big Yokolop could happen anytime. Since the glacier, the basin, and the amount of water inside are constantly changing, scientists say it's tricky to predict how big the flood will be this time. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486-4499.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Comments are wanted on payout plans for Gulf cod and Chinook salmon. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
Comments are wanted by August 14th on draft plans to distribute $24.4 million in relief payments for the 2018 Gulf of Alaska cod crash and $10.3 million for the sockeye salmon run failure at Chinook. After working with stakeholders and NOAA Fisheries since February, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has developed a draft payout plan. For cod, the plan calls for 40% of the $24.4 million to go to harvesters among six gear types. The proportions for each are based on losses determined by comparing the five-year averaged adjusted wholesale values from 2013 to 2017 to the 2018 value. Processors would receive 26% of the funds. Based on the average wholesale value of cod processed, communities are eligible for 4%. 30% of the funds are earmarked for research. For the Chignik sockeye salmon run failure, the draft distribution plan calls for 55% of the $10.3 million to go to harvesters, which would add up to about 75% of the 2015 to 2017 average dockside value of the salmon fishery. Fish and Game proposes to subdivide the harvester allocations into two pools, 65% for permit holders and 35% for crew members. Processors would receive 11%. Communities in the Chignik region would get 3%. 1% of the funds would go to subsistence users, and 30% would go towards research. Deadline to comment on the proposed payout plans is August 14th. Find links to both at the Fish and Game website under Fishing, and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
I do have one personal message here. This is for Cecilia Lloyd. We have a message for Cece to please phone home. Cecilia Lloyd, phone home. All right, well, it's 71 degrees in Kodiak right now. Oh my goodness, already it's 71 degrees. It's going to be a sunny day, really calm wind. Sunny and hot. Tonight, clear with a low around 55, west wind around 5 miles per hour. And tomorrow, another sunny day, high near 68 with calm wind. If you're heading up to the mainland and Homer, right now it's 60 degrees. Their high is 65. It's also going to be a beautiful sunny day. Winds at the west-southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. And tonight, 51 degrees, partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow in Homer, high of 66, 10% chance of rain. And winds from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. In Anchorage right now, it's 66 degrees. They're looking at a high of 71. Lots of sunshine. Winds from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. And tonight, a low of 55 with partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow in Anchorage, 76 degrees. 10% chance of rain. Winds 5 to 10 miles per hour from the west-northwest. Well, today is Tuesday, the 28th of July. The sun rose at 5:58 a.m. and it will set tonight at 10:33 p.m., giving us 16 hours and 36 minutes of daylight. We will have lost 4 minutes and 4 seconds of daylight, but the good news is that the sun's going to rise tomorrow, right at 6 a.m. Our record high was 82 in 1929. I don't think we'll make that today, but we might get close. And our record low was 40 in 1971. If you're heading out onto the water, that high pressure system is still in control of the Gulf of Alaska over the next at least couple of days. For west of the Barren Islands, including Kamchatka Bay today, west wind of 20 knots with seas at 6 feet. For Barren Islands east, west wind of 20 knots, seas at 4 feet. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak today, west wind of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet. For Chiniak Bay today, west wind of 10 knots in the morning, becoming variable less than 10 knots with seas at 3 feet. For Marmot Bay today, west wind of 15 knots, diminishing to 10 knots in the afternoon with seas at 2 feet. Tomorrow, west wind of 10 knots in the morning, becoming variable less than 10 knots with seas at 3 feet. And for the Shelikof Strait today, west wind of 20 knots with seas at 5 feet. Tonight, southwest wind of 20 knots with seas at 6 feet. And Wednesday, tomorrow, southwest wind of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet. All right, for the Kodiak tides, we have a low tide coming up at 2:36 p.m. of 1.91 feet. And a high tide tonight at 9:18 p.m. of 8.55 feet. Over on the west side in Neuganic Bay, low tide at 3:26 p.m. of 3.26 feet. That's convenient. And high tide tonight at 9:42 p.m. of 13.88 feet. All right, we got a pretty long Fish and Game message. Then we'll have some community announcements. And then we'll have Talk of the Rock. We're going to talk sports, youth sports.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 12, date issued 10 a.m. on July 28th. There will be a 24-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Wednesday, July 29th to 9 p.m. Thursday, July 30th in the following areas. In the outer Iakulik and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. Closed waters are increased until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 30th, in Deadman Bay of the Humpy Deadman section of the Alitak District to all waters of Deadman Bay in the Humpy Deadman section north of a latitude of Cape Hepburn, 56 degrees, 57.5 north latitude. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, July 29th to 9 p.m. Thursday, July 30th in the following areas. In the southeast of Fog Neck, Raspberry Strait, northwest of Fog Neck, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, and northeast of Fog Neck sections of the Fog Neck District. The seaward zones of the northwest of Fog Neck and Shuyak Island sections of the Fog Neck District remain closed to commercial salmon fishing. The Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, and Iziut Bay sections of the Fog Neck District will be extended from 9 p.m. Thursday, July 30th, until further notice. Closed waters are increased from 9 p.m. Thursday, July 30th, until further notice, to the fishing game markers placed by hatchery staff near Big Katoy Creek, stream number 252324, and to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay Creek, stream number 252323. As previously announced, the following areas will close at 9 p.m. Wednesday, July 29th. The Big River, Hallow Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Dakovac Bay, and Katmai sections of the Mainland District, and the Alinchak Bay section of the Mainland District north of a latitude of Cape Kekernoi, 57 degrees, 43.5 north latitude. The seaward zones of the Alinchak Bay, Katmai, Dakovac Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Hallow Bay, and Big River sections of the Mainland District remain closed to commercial salmon fishing. The following areas are currently scheduled to close at 9 p.m. Thursday, July 30th. The Sturgeon, Inner Karluk, Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Anton Larson Bay, Sheratin Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Zachar Bay, Spiridon Bay, and Uyak Bay sections already remain closed, and the Southwest of Fog Neck and Duck Bay sections of the Fog Neck District. Closed waters are reduced until 9 p.m. Thursday, July 30th in the following areas: to Karluk Lagoons Exit Channel Terminus at the ocean shoreline and to Sturgeon Lagoons Exit Channel Terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice: the Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area or Telrod Cove. And until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District south of latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fishing Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
All right, just a few community announcements, and then we'll get right into talk of the rock. The Alaska Aerospace Corporation will be conducting rocket launch operations at Narrow Cape in the coming weeks. Launch windows will start at 6 p.m. local time, August 2nd through August 7th. The following restrictions, coordinated with the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, will be enforced to ensure public safety. Launch day road restrictions, road locks. The Passagshack Road will be blocked on launch day immediately east of Mile 13, entrance to Pacific Spaceport Complex, Alaska. That is a mouthful. The Passagshack Road block will be manned prior to the opening of the launch window. It will initially function as a checkpoint for all traffic authorized to proceed past the roadblock. All non-launch associated vehicles and personnel will not directly associated with the launch will be cleared from the area beyond the Passagshack roadblock approximately 3 hours prior to the launch to ensure public safety. There will be an electronic sign in Bell's Flats on the Chiniac Highway with information regarding road closures at PSCA. Contact information for questions pertaining to the road closure may be directed to Paul Pena, Ground Safety Officer, at 907-942-4000. 4485 or Robert Green, Spaceport Manager, 907-229-2007. 13 to 18-year-olds, you can apply now for a virtual digital storytelling internship in which you would document stories of culture and COVID-19. The online internship will be held during the month of August and is sponsored by the Kodiak History Museum, Batanga Productions, and Sea Stories. No digital storytelling experience is required. For more information or to apply, go to the Kodiak History Museum's Facebook page, and applications are due by tomorrow, July 29th. Caregiving 101 webinar, Being a Decision Maker. Making decisions for a loved one living with dementia often presents difficult challenges. It can be emotional and overwhelming for family caregivers. Join the webinar and learn about the legal tools necessary to take control, as well as a process that may be useful to try when we're faced with making decisions for our loved ones. The webinar is Friday, July 31st from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. and is free to attend. Registration is required. If you want, go to our community calendar on our website at kmxt.org, and the link is there in the calendar. This is again on Friday, July 31st. For more information, you can contact Amber Smith at asmith@alzalaska.org or call 907-586-6044.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.